Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 76 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we talk to Margaret Flack about the alarming development in puppy farms and dog dealing in the UK.
These dogs are all running around in filth. The place is not clean, and the one thing that you do and you never get over is the smell.
We have a review of Kate and Jin's book. We'll have the Dogcast Radio news and an interview with the woman who's brought the Greater Swiss Mountain Dog to the UK. But before all that, we have a treat for you. If it's November, it's time for the National Dog Show, sponsored by Purina. We caught up with co-host David Fry to find out more.
How many breeds will be competing?
Well, there are 170 breeds and varieties recognized by the American Kennel Club at this point in time, and most of them we anticipate will be at the National Dog Show. So spectators on television and in person will get the chance to see a lot of wonderful dogs.
They will. That's going to translate into many, many actual dogs. Now, if there's 170 breeds, that's going to be a lot of dogs.
Well, I think we'll have in the neighborhood of between 1,500 and 2,000 dogs. It should be a great event for anybody who likes that, and we think a lot of people do. So we want to be entertaining to the people at home and to the people who are at the venue as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, can you tell us a bit about what dogs have had to do to get them to the show?
Well, it's an open dog show, so people can enter any AKC registered dog that's at least 6 months old. And there's a lot of work that goes into it. You get to see the dogs in front of the judges, and the judges will look at them for maybe 2 minutes, but it really... there's a lot more involved in that in terms of conditioning and grooming and training. Really, it's a lifetime for a lot of people. It's a great family sport, so there's a lot of people that have been doing this for years and years with generations of their family and generations of their dog families.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot more work going on sort of behind the scenes, as it were, than we get to actually see.
Well, we all hope that our dogs will have a divine moment of inspiration while they're standing there in front of the judge. But sometimes it doesn't always happen. You've worked hard and you get your dog well trained, and it just happens that they decide they're going to act up the moment the judge gets there. So we all kind of laugh about that and say, well, there's always tomorrow.
Yes, yeah. There's a saying we have here that you always take the best dog home anyway.
Well, that's what we say all the time on television, that we want you to watch and see who's going to be the best in show dog for the National Dog Show or the best in show dog for the Westminster Kennel Club, and that will become America's dog for the next year. But we all know that the real best in show dog is the one that's sitting there on the couch with you at home.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So there's a ton of work that's going on before they've got to the show. What do they have to do at the show to have a shot at best in show?
Well, it's like an advancing bracket in sports. You compete at several different levels, and as long as you keep winning, you keep advancing. In our case, it's the simplest part of it is that one dog of each breed will be selected as best of breed in that breed and then advance to its group. There are, as we said, 170 different breeds and varieties. They are divided into seven different groups: the sporting group, the hound group, the working group, the terrier group, the toy group, the non-sporting group, and the herding group. So there's seven different breeds. The Irish Setter, for example, competes against all the other Irish Setters. One of those dogs is selected best of breed in Irish Setters. That dog then advances into the sporting group, where it competes against the other sporting dogs, like the Brittany and the English Setter and the Labrador Retriever and the Pointer and the Cocker Spaniels. One of those dogs is selected as the group-winning dog in the sporting group. So that happens in seven different groups. At the end, those seven different group winners come together in the ring, and one of them is selected as best in show.
So that's almost sort of king or queen dog, isn't it, then?
It really is. The dog that's seen by millions of people watching on NBC on Thanksgiving Day is going to be a dog with quite some notoriety.
Yes, yeah. Now, I've been looking at various websites, and I haven't come across this in British showing, but I understand that even if you're not picked out by the judge, you can still get, well, the dog can still get points towards a championship. Have I got that right?
That's right. And that's kind of what we call competition in the classes before the best of breed dog is selected. But it happens with male dogs that are not yet champions, and we select one of those dogs as winner's dog, and it wins a number of points towards its championship. We do the same thing with the females, and that dog is selected as winner's bitch. And those two dogs, the winner's dog and the winner's bitch, advance into the finals with the other dogs that are already champions, and one of them is then selected as the best breed dog.
Right, got you. Okay. Now, you've mentioned, of course, you know, you stand there in front of the judge and, you know, he or she is making their mind up and sort of looking at your dog and taking lots of things into account. So can you give us any insight into what the judges are actually looking for?
Well, every breed has a written standard that describes the ideal specimen of that breed, and it generally relates form to function. If a dog is a hunting dog, like a sight hound, for example, the Afghan hound, which happens to have been my breed for 35 years. They have to be leggy and able to run. They have to have a great depth of chest and have kind of a greyhound-type body. They have to be able to see their prey. They're called a sight hound. They have to be able to see their prey that they're running down. They have to be great athletes. So the standard describes the dog, how tall it might be, the proper angles it should have, cosmetic sounding things like eye shape and eye color, ear placement, tail set, and things like that. And the judge has to look at the overall picture, but also has to look at each of those parts and then try to put it together at the very end. They have to have equal parts of judgment as an artist looking at the total picture and as an engineer looking at how all the parts fit together. And then watching them move in the ring, making sure that they can move properly without a bunch of interference and be sound so that they're able to do the things that they need to do on their feet.
Yeah.
And it's every day is a new day in the dog show world. My dogs, when I was showing dogs every weekend, you know, some weekends they were better than others. It's just like an athlete. Michael Jordan didn't score 40 points every time out. But sometimes my dogs are better than other times, and that's part of the sport.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess to an extent as well, the judging is a little bit subjective. You know, it's
very subjective. A lot of our standards have language in it like great length of neck. Well, what's great length of neck? Great length of neck may mean one thing to one judge and something else to another judge. There really are not a lot of specifics. There are specifics, I think, in terms of height and weights, perhaps, but for the most part, the standards leave a lot of room to individual interpretation because there is no perfect dog. I may see an Irish setter with a beautiful headpiece, but maybe it doesn't move quite right. Now I'm comparing it to an Irish setter that moves beautifully, but maybe doesn't have the same kind of headpiece. So you have to have some give and take, and you decide what's important to you and your interpretation of the standard, how the dog is able to do the job that it was bred to do, and that's how you pick your winners. But that subjectivity is what keeps the sport alive, because a different judge on a different day may like a different dog.
Yeah, and I suppose that's what keeps you going to the next show, doesn't it? Thinking, well, the next one might.
Well, it really does.
Yeah.
If we did all that work all week long and all the grooming and conditioning and all the things that we need to do to get our dogs ready to show, if we were getting the same result every week out, I think the sport would die in a hurry. But this way, with the subjectivity involved and individual likes and our important points that we're looking for in our dogs, I think that keeps us going.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've mentioned your Afghan hounds. I understand you also have Brittany Spaniels.
I have the world's two greatest Brittany Spaniels, Ty and Belle. One of them is a show champion, Belle, and they are both certified therapy dogs that visit as part of our Angel on a Leash program here at Westminster, our therapy dog program. They visit children every week at the Ronald McDonald House and in other places too, but most regularly at the Ronald McDonald House, where they're working with kids with cancer here in New York City. So I'm very proud of them, and they bring great joy to my life, and those are my best in show dogs.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, yeah. I looked at your website, and I know you're very proud, justifiably proud, and it must be so rewarding to go in with your dog as a therapy dog.
Well, it really is, and I've had the good fortune of having a great Afghan Hound show dog, a number of great show dogs in the Afghan Hound world, but in particular one, Storm Hills Who's Zoomin' who was the top Afghan in the country and retired as the top-winning female in the history of the breed with 20 all-breed bests. But I say every day now that I wouldn't trade anything I do with these kids for any ribbon anytime. And I think when we talk about people at dog shows, we're talking about real people and real dogs that do these kinds of things every day. We see them in the show ring, and maybe it's not their day in the show ring, but if they're going home and next Tuesday they're going to go visit some kids in a hospital somewhere, I think that's the real joy of owning a dog and having a dog in your family and being able to do those kinds of things to make people's lives better. And we're very proud of those dogs, too. And we're very proud of the fact that these are real dogs. They're not just show dogs that sit on doggy cushions and eat doggy bonbons all week long. They are part of our family and part of the things that we do every day.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as well, if a dog isn't sociable and sort of well-adjusted and friendly, they're not going to do well in the ring anyway, are they?
That's true, because if they're not having a good time, it's not going to be fun for you as a handler. Find something else to do with them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of activities they can do. They don't have to go in the show ring and be successful. That's not the ultimate measure of your dog. Your ultimate measure of your dog is the joy that they bring to you and your family and other people. And I think that let's have fun at dog shows, but let's not have it be so important that we forget the wonderful things that dogs do for us.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Now, another thing to do with the show world is there's lots of terminology that, you know, sometimes you think, what on earth does that mean? So I was, again, having a look at the Purina.com website, and there's a really useful glossary there. So, for example, you know, the National Dog Show is a bench show, isn't it?
Yes, it is. There are very few bench dog shows left in this country, but a bench dog show is mainly for the spectators at the event, in that you know that the dogs are going to be in a certain place at a certain time. By being benched, it means that I know that all of the Doberman Pinschers are going to be on row 11B when they're not in the ring being shown. So if I want to go talk to the Doberman Pinscher owners and breeders and find out about the breed and get up close and personal with the dogs themselves, get to pet them and see what they're really like, that's what bench dog shows are all about. So
yeah,
you have that opportunity. Instead of dogs just coming in to be shown and then going home when they're done, they have to be there all day long so that we can help educate people about responsible dog ownership, about breeds in particular, and about how to find the right dog for you and your family, finding a dog that matches your lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah. Now, another term that is quite intriguing and isn't actually what it sounds like is stacking. So can you tell us what that is?
Well, stacking is basically setting the dog up into a pose that allows the judge to go over them, but it's a set position that the feet are where you want them to be, so it shows off the parts of the dog that are important for that breed. And basically it's a four square position with your feet on the ground, and depending on the breed, they are set either straight under the dog or pulled out from under the dog or whatever, but basically it's supposed to show that the dog has sound structure and exhibits those breed traits that are important for that breed.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's quite easy to overlook, because I didn't appreciate. You know, you kind of hear, oh, it's just a dog beauty show. But the dog has to learn, and this really I found mind-blowing, but the dog has to learn where to put his feet in the right position.
Well, sometimes the handler has to help with that, of course, but that's what the best handlers do. They get the dog set up and shown to perfection and get out of their way so the judge can have a good look at the dog. But yes, it's more than a beauty contest. While we don't get to see it happening in the dog show ring, a judge has to be able to picture this dog doing the function that it was bred to do. An Alaskan Malamute better be a big and powerful dog, and you have to be able to imagine it pulling a sledge full of freight wherever it goes in the Great North. And if you can't see that in the dog, then it's not correct. If I don't see a great athlete in the Saluki that's a sight hound and runs its prey down, then it's not then it's not right for the breed. And those are the kinds of things that our judges who have spent years and probably most of their lives in some cases studying these breeds or knowing their own breed that they grew up in or showed in, those are the things that they look for. And they say, you know, I just couldn't picture this dog running all day long in the field herding cattle. It just didn't have that kind of condition or that kind of look to it, or a structure that would hold up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a new breed this year is the Dog de Bordeaux, isn't it?
Yes. It's it becomes the 170th breed. It's a French dog, of course, a working dog, and is a beautiful dog. I think anybody who remembers the movie about 20-some years ago with Tom Hanks in it, Turner and Hooch, that was the Dog de Bordeaux, Hooch. And it's a beautiful reddish dog, and I think we'll have a nice look at it for everybody on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that makes me feel terribly old to realize that film was 27 years ago. I don't think it was that long.
Well, I've done the dog show on television for all 7 years of its existence, and I've done Westminster for 20 years now. It seems like we've gone up about 25 different breeds during the course of that time, and when somebody says, well, that dog's been around a long time, and I said, no, I remember when it had its first year at Westminster, so I guess I am getting old.
Never mind.
You know, a lot of these dogs have been around for years, even though they're being introduced now. The Dog de Bordeaux has been around for 1,000 years in France, and it just sometimes takes a while for dogs to be recognized in this country. Around the world, in the international, the FCI, which is the international body, there are probably close to 400 different breeds that are recognized and eligible for competition there. But to be recognized in this country, they have to have a certain following. There has to be a certain population of them. They have to have a certain geographic distribution, and they have to have a parent club, the Dog de Bordeaux Club of America, that advocates for the dog and helps protect their breeding purity.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I gather that the televising of the show is sort of becoming a holiday viewing tradition, and it's really, really popular, isn't it? So can you tell us when it's on?
It's on Thanksgiving Day at noon, immediately following the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. The National Dog Show presented by Purina has become a great family tradition. This is our 7th year of the show, and John O'Hurley, my partner, and I have a great time imagining ourselves being in the living rooms and dens and even in the kitchens of families across the country as they're getting ready for this great American holiday. And we span generations. We know the youngest kids are there, and we know that the grandparents and great-grandparents are also part of it, too. And being able to watch the dog show gives everybody something to talk about and pick out their favorites and root for the dog that they want to see win.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope this year is as good as all the others have been.
Well, thank you, Julie. We have great fun being there with everybody, and we hope that people are having fun with us as well.
So that's your Thanksgiving Day afternoon sorted out, then. Watch the show dogs battle it out. If you'd like to find out more about the National Dog Show sponsored by Purina, we have links to nationaldogshow.com, and you can find that very useful glossary of dog show terms at purina.com. DavidFry.com will tell you more about, well, that's right, David Fry. Happy viewing.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Don't forget, if you've enjoyed the Buddy's Diaries fiction and articles on Dogcast Radio, there's now a Buddy's Diary book. You can see the Dogcast Radio website for further details, and buying the book helps support Dogcast Radio. A man may smile and bid you hail, yet wish you to the devil. But when a good dog wags his tail, you know he's on the level. Kate and Gin are the heel-work-to-music dancing duo who's shot to fame in the UK television show Britain's Got Talent. Well, you've seen them dance, now you can read their book, which is simply called Kate and Gin. This is a book any dog lover will find interesting. It tells the story of how Kate and Gin got together, imparting a lot of sound advice along the way. Gin even gets her own pages to give her side of things. Their time on Britain's Got Talent is featured, as well as Kate's plans for the future. The cover promises that you and your dog can learn to dance and do tricks, and the book contains lots of clear photographs to illustrate the instructions. Once you've read this, you and your dog need never be bored again. Starting with basic obedience and moving on to tricks and heel work to music, Kate takes you through training your dog as she does Gin. Kate advises using signs as well as verbal commands and includes a section on further activities and dog sports available. This is a mix of training manual intertwined with Kate and Gin's biography, and the emphasis is always on making it fun for your dog and strengthening your bond. It's encouraging to read that Gin hasn't always been the perfectly trained dog she is now. As a young dog, she was difficult, and thanks to professional help and dedication, Kate turned her into the star performer we know and love. One of the important messages of the book is that it's always worth persevering with training, even, or maybe especially, when it's difficult. We've been lucky enough to see them perform live twice, and it was lovely to see the special relationship between them and how much Gin enjoys working. I also like the book because the cover is sparkly. To find out where you can buy your copy, click on the link on the Dogcast Radio site. If you can look at a dog and not feel vicarious excitement and affection, you must be a cat. I've never seen a dog for sale in a pet shop because I think it's a fairly rare occurrence in the UK. But apparently, if a new pet superstore company have their way, that is going to change. This is a development that should horrify and mobilise all British dog lovers. Already, a very strong campaign is underway to put an end to this awful abuse.
Margaret, you're involved at the moment, along with the Kennel Club and the newspaper Our Dogs, at trying to stop dogs being dealt with and sold and bred in a particular way. So can you tell us what it is that you're trying to stop?
On the whole, we're trying to stop puppy farming in the United Kingdom and also their retail outlets that sell these animals. The conditions that the dogs arrive in is horrendous, and we think it should be stamped out.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, we hear this term, you know, puppy farm. Can you give us an idea of what the reality of a puppy farm is?
Until last week, I'd never visited one, and I've now visited two. The reality is there is lots of dogs, all kept in different sections. The dogs that I saw at one particular farm, there were puppies in sort of like a big pen. They were running around in their own excrement, their own urine, and the owners just throwing food. The fittest ones survive and the other ones don't. A lot of these dogs are starved and they don't get any vet help. The mothers that are waiting for puppies are in another pen, all grouped together. The mothers who have had puppies are in another pen where on the floor was a bit of sawdust and a few newspaper shredded to make a bed for the puppies. Mm. And that's supposed to give them, you know, the warmth and everything else when the mother's not around. And in other pen, Elbate's bitches been waiting to be mated. These dogs are all running around in filth. Mm. The place is not clean. And the one thing that you do and you never get over is the smell when you go into this place. It actually lingers. Even today, a week later, I can still smell this. And you see these dogs so scared. It's unbelievable. It's a sight you never forget. You never want to forget it.
Mm.
And the hardest thing is walking away, knowing that you can't do anything. You can't do anything to save them. A lot of them will die because they're not looked after. A vet, well, they don't have them. Whatever dies just goes in a bin.
Oh.
And it's horrendous that this trade is going on here.
Yeah.
And you just don't believe it. Mm. I didn't.
No, no. And I mean, they're not living like dogs at all, are they?
No, they're not. To be honest, I wouldn't put, even though I dislike these people, these puppy farmers, I wouldn't put one of those people in that situation. I wouldn't put anybody in that situation. And to think that these dogs have served in forces here in, you know, not the ones in, obviously, the puppy farms, but they, you know, we love them.
Mm.
They live in homes. They've done so much for us dogs throughout the whole history of the UK. And to think that it's allowed to go on. And the government do nothing to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, the Welsh government actually gives them money to be able to start up as puppy farmers.
Oh.
That's the worst part.
Yeah.
And our government are so busy looking into other people's back gardens that they're not seeing what's going on here in the UK itself. And this huge trade makes these people millions of pounds.
Mm.
Millions. And it's all tax-free.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you just get a dog and you breed.
Yeah.
But it's not that simple.
Oh, no. No, well, it shouldn't be, should it? No, no.
No.
You also, you this dog smuggling and dog dealers. Yeah. Now, what's that then?
The dog smuggling is where the dogs are smuggled into the country, or where genuine people who've bought dogs, their dogs just disappear and we never see them again.
Mm.
We've had cases of people turning up at genuine breeders' homes where they've purchased their dogs on the seemingly fact that these animals are going into a loving environment home, a very good pet home, and it hasn't turned out that way. They've ended up in puppy farms. The smuggling side is they're coming in from one country, Ireland, going into Wales, and they're being brought across on a ferry. These dogs you never see again. They disappear. And dogs that have ended up in a pet store, say, doesn't get sold, then they just disappear as well. And as one person said to me, well, if it doesn't sell, you just whack it on the back of the head.
Oh, dear.
It just happens. You know, it's a reality to these people. And as a member in the store in Leeds turned around and said to me when I visited on Sunday, it goes over your head after a little while.
Oh.
You get used to it.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but I couldn't get used to something like that. No matter how much, you know, time I spent with these animals, I'd feel sicker and sicker that I was actually involved in this sort of trade. You know, but these people don't care. They really genuinely don't care.
Yeah. I mean, when you think, when you live with a dog and you look in their eyes and the love and companionship they give you, and as you say, all the qualities they have, they'll work for us, they'll love us, they'll help us, they'll live with us. And then to hear them being treated like that, when you think of your own dog and the bond you have with him or her, and then contrast that with that, it really brings it home how absolutely horrendous that is for the dogs, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you look at their life, they haven't got a life. These dogs are in pure existence to breed. They're bred from 6 months or 7 months, whenever the bitch comes into their first season, and it's continuous until they can't breed no more.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. Their dogs are just used. The same dog could sire generations of its own siblings. You know, the father, the grandfather, the great-grandfather. And this is the reality. They're producing dogs that aren't supposed to be bred like this. There are no health checks, no welfare for the dogs. And these dogs eventually, somewhere down the line, will turn out to be something that's totally non-resemblant of the breed they started out to be. And I did actually have one in my home that was rescued from the store in Leeds and is being checked out by a vet. And it came to my home on, crikey, Tuesday of this week. And it actually, a 4.5-month-old bitch puppy turned straight at my 16-month-old bitch and pinned her in a corner.
Mm.
These are what the reality we're dealing with when you're dealing with dogs like Rottweilers, dogs like Staffordshire Bull Terriers. All these dogs are in that store and they're in a pen with a glass door and people are banging on them. And when they're in solitary confinement on their own like this, with no toys, something in the brain just gives.
Yeah.
And that's what these people are selling. They're not selling the pets that you'd expect to get. They're selling pets that have never been treated from the minute they're conceived until the minute they're sold.
Mm.
And when you take a dog out of that environment, it is lost. And if any, you know, eventually it can attack someone and turn on them.
It hasn't,
that's the reality.
Yeah. It hasn't learned how to be a dog, has it, at all?
No, it hasn't, because it's kept from one cage to another. No socialisation whatsoever. I mean, these dogs are just commodities to these people, something that will make them money from £525 up to £1,000. That's the reality of them. On Saturday, say the breed that I'm in, Shih Tzus, there was 20 of them in the store. I went in on Sunday and there was 5. They're one of their top selling dogs. So you work at nearly £600 a dog.
Yeah.
You know, and the vet in the store passed this vet, this particular dog as fit, It was take, that was on the Sunday. The dog was taken to another vet on Monday, and he would not have passed its fit for sale. This dog was 5 kilos underweight.
Oh.
It was also had no muscle tone to support its own weight.
Mm-hmm.
It was going round in a circle, chasing its own tail. So obviously the brain had been damaged in some way, and it attacked my dog the next day. And luckily this dog doesn't reside with me. But some misfortunate person could pick up one of these dogs,
yeah,
take it home, and it could be a child that's attacked.
Yes, yeah.
But the puppy farmers don't care as long as they get the money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, the other problem here, presumably, is, you know, if the dog like that, if there's anything that you can do for it and it ends up with someone like you that knows dogs, that's one thing. But if it's just a whim purchase, you've gone into the shop and gone, oh, there's a lovely dog, I'll buy that, and you don't know anything about dogs, you know, and their psychology and sort of what the problems might be, the dog just doesn't stand a chance, does it?
The dog can end up as a dangerous weapon.
Yeah.
Waiting for a time bomb to go off, and put in the wrong hands, dogs like this, you know, are lethal.
Yes.
And, you know, it is a reality. These dogs, especially Rottweilers, they are a specialised breed. They're not a vicious breed.
No.
They are a specialised breed. And I've owned Rottweilers, and I had 5. They were the most gentlest dogs.
Yeah.
Under the right circumstances and looked after and cared for in the correct way and in the right hands can make fantastic, loving pets.
Absolutely.
In the wrong hands, like any dog, even a Yorkshire Terrier, can turn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that's the reality.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is what could come to fruit in the future. These dogs is all right selling them, but it's what happens to the dogs afterwards and what happens to the people that actually buy them if they're on the receiving end of a dog that viciously attacks, or a small child is, or a baby. Will the shop stand up and take responsibility then?
No.
I don't think so.
No. And as you say, it's sort of the breeds, it gets a bad name for the breed, you know, and it's not a genuine representation.
No, and when you think that there's so much done for the wealth of the breeds, you look at the breed clubs and what they're trying to promote is healthy dogs. We have, you know, set of standards like every breed club in the UK, and we have to adhere to them. And the one thing you have to do is care about the welfare, the health issues that go with the breed, but most important is temperament.
Mm.
If you haven't got a good basis to start with, then you wouldn't breed from it. But these people just don't care. They just breed from them, whether it's got a good temperament or not. They don't know because they never see the dogs. They only go in and throw them scraps of food and see how many puppies have been born, count the next lot of money that they're going to get in.
Yeah.
And that there's a complete turnaround in dogs. These stores are no sooner full than they're empty again.
Mm.
And decent breeders, people that actually work for the benefit of the breed, work to maintain a standard, that actually care about the dogs they've bred and want them to go into loving homes, we're going to be a thing of the past. It's going to be a retail outlet like this, so I was told, that just churns the dogs out. And people, because you can pay £50 down and go and do it on the Never Never, buy them there.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to a good breeder where they can see the mother, the father, maybe generations of the dogs. That's where you should buy your dogs from, a reputable breeder.
Mm.
And there is enough of them in the country at the moment to work towards without having to have puppy farmers' dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know. Even the puppy farmers don't know anything about the dogs that one they're breeding or the dogs they've bred.
No. The kind of people we're talking about, obviously, they're going to be up to all kinds of sharp practices. So I imagine it's very difficult to put them out of business and, you know, they're going to find a way to go on one way or another, aren't they?
Well, unless the Kennel Club are given the legislation that they need, and there's a lot of us backing this, and every single person that breeds in this country, whether it's a show person, I'm talking across the board, is made to join the accredited breeder scheme and come into line with legislation, then this is going to go on. And it's going to go on and on and on. And the suffering that these dogs will go through is partly our fault because we sit back and we do nothing, which is exactly what I did before I came involved in this. You live in this bubble, you think it doesn't exist. It does exist. I've seen it.
Mm.
And that's the reality. And if, like they say, they're going to open more stores down the country and they're coming to the south, we're an easy access route to the continent.
Mm.
So what is it? I mean, their laws are so different to ours. They'll be able to come in, have this puppy that's vaccinated, and leave. So we're spreading our trouble with these dogs throughout the continent. And then what does Britain get a name for? Breeding bad-tempered dogs. Dogs that aren't fit, dogs that aren't healthy. That's a great way to promote dogs in the UK. Whereas before, we have always been known to be one of the best breeders of dogs in the world. Certainly our show dogs and everything are a semblance of that. You know, they win all over. And people want to buy our dogs because they know we have a good standard here in the UK. Well, not if these people are finished, we won't.
No, no.
That's the truth. You can go in there and you can buy 36 to 40 different breeds of dogs. And what they don't have, they can get for you.
Yeah.
You know, it's the designer dog gone wrong.
Absolutely.
Basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And the owner, you know, he can bury his head in the sand all he likes, but I don't think it's going to go away as he hopes it's going to, because I think at the end of the day, with the amount of protests that are going to be going ahead, there is another one planned. The fact that I have spoken to councillors and MPs, Bernard Lee in Pendlebury and Ian Stewart, who's the MP, he came out to meet us, Bernard and everything. Their stores are answerable. The RSPCA themselves are at the store in Leeds every week. And their hands are tied. Their excuse is every time they go into the store and there's a dog that's in question or dogs that are in question, then they just say it's under the vet. I pointed out a Weimara that was so thin you could see its backbone and count its ribs. And this dog couldn't stand. But the RSPCA walked away and had to leave it. With new legislation, they won't be able to do that.
No, absolutely.
And the store won't be able to sell it. And as the girl said, these dogs come in, they point them out, and then they disappear.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to know where they disappear to.
Yeah. When you mentioned that, when is the next demonstration, and how can people keep up with the, find out when the dates of the demos are?
Right, the next demonstration up at the stores is in December, just running up to their Christmas trade.
Mm-hmm.
It will be posted on billboard posters in the local towns. Our dogs will be able to give you a full blow-by-blow detail of actually what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the Kennel Club, again, who've come out and backed us in a press release, because they're trying to abolish this sort of thing as well, will hold it on their website. So there will be places, you know, there'll be leaflets put up beforehand in vets' practices, telling people when it's going to take place, what time it's going to take place, and how to be there.
Yeah.
Even if you save just one puppy, it's worth it. It's worth getting up, you know, doing a 450-mile drive, which some of us did, all from Scotland down over as far as Ayrshire. The life of one puppy is just worth it, weighed against the loss. But what people have got to remember, every time they buy a dog from this store, they're not saving that dog. They're creating another litter to be born. And, you know, the process goes on. Because that's what they have. You know, the more money they make in off people, the more it lines their pockets, the more they want to breed.
Yeah. I know that you've sort of had one man banned from breeding. And he's just found a solution and carried on, hasn't he?
Yes, I mean, it's a vicious circle. All you do is set up in another name. All you do is use somebody else's name. You find somewhere else for the dogs to go. That's the way it is. And unfortunately, it's like a vicious circle. You close one down, he might open up further along the street and trade in his friend's name. Change your name. It happens often enough in Britain where people decide by depot to change the name. That's all these people do. And some people have even got the bottle to carry on trading. They just get a different premises, but there's nobody to check them. There's nobody policing this. The RSPCA are undermanned, and the trading standards who set the licences haven't got the staff to do it. As they said, their legislation, which was set up in 1951 for the Dogs Act, is so far out of date that today's standards of dogs, it doesn't even come close to covering them. It doesn't come close to setting rules that govern what happens with the dogs. That's why puppy farmers go jumping through the loopholes. And they can't tie them down unless there's a real form of severe cruelty that you can prove beyond all reasonable doubt. Then there's nothing they can do. And there isn't many people willing to stick their neck out on the line against these people.
No, I imagine they're fairly you know, determined and desperate people.
Well, they're not the nicest people.
No. You sound as if you're absolutely determined to pursue this until you know, you get the solution you want.
I don't think it's going to go away. I think there's a lot of us that actually do care about what's happening. And, you know, show people and breeders as a whole that breed pedigree dogs had a bad insight not so long on an exposed program that didn't show us in the best light. But we do care about our dogs. We really, truly do. You know, we don't breed mutants. We breed to a standard. You know, if they want to take a look at mutants, take a look at the dogs that are being bred there. And if they start at the basis and work up over, then they'll find that there are decent breeders that breed pedigree dogs. And we aren't going to go away. We're not going to let them continue. And there's enough of us, and we're gaining support. You know, and because we're all now talking, which as it was, there wasn't enough of us talking. We're doing it in little groups. We're all now talking to each other, and we're drawing up what really is going on, the full picture, which is where when you only have little snippets, you never get the full picture of what actually happens. But now we do. We've got a pretty good idea of what's really, truly going on out there. Mm. And the amount of dogs that are being bred.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you very much for that. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Well, just that if everyone in the UK that actually breeds a dog joins the accredited breeder scheme, then they are helping these dogs, because the kennel club with the correct backing will be able to put a stop to these animals being traded in the way they are. And that's basically it. Don't buy from a puppy farmer.
Yeah, yeah.
Contact the breed clubs and they will help you.
It's a very important message. Don't buy from puppy farms, buy from reputable breeders. We'll keep you informed through the show and the blog on the Dogcast Radio site about developments and demonstrations. Children are for people who can't have dogs.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Nick. In China, there have been some surprising developments for dogs. First, at Jiaozhou City Zoo, keepers have given an orphan monkey his very own canine bodyguard. The baby monkey was getting picked on by the older monkeys, but after he palled up with brave guard dog Sai Hu, the problem stopped. The two have bonded to the extent that when Sai Hu sees the baby in danger, he steps in to break things up, and the tiny monkey will often jump onto the dog's back knowing it is a place of safety. So now man's best friend is also monkey's best friend. Staying in China, apparently the Pekingese, that most traditional of Chinese breeds, is losing popularity in its home country. The flat-faced breed, which according to Chinese legend is the offspring of a lion and a marmoset monkey, was once an exclusive breed associated with royalty. Commoners were banned from owning them, and if they had fancied one, they would never have been able to afford it, as the pricey peak cost the same as a car. Now their price has dropped, as their availability has increased. And it seems that familiarity has bred contempt, as many Chinese now prefer imported breeds such as poodles, retrievers, chihuahuas, and even that symbol of Britishness, the bulldog. According to Professor Harold Hartley of the University of Western Carolina, dog breeds have long experienced waxes and wanes of popularity in the West, and in the East for now, it seems the peak has passed its peak. One dog who remains very popular with her owner is Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin's dog, Kony. The Black Labrador was recently given a GPS collar which will allow the dog's movements to be tracked using the Russian GLONASS system. The system was developed by the Russian military, but will soon be available to civilians, and lucky Kony is among the first to make use of it. In the UK, in Tyneside, another Labrador might have need of a GPS collar, in case he was swept off into the distance, because 3-year-old Harvey loves to surf. After years of watching his owners paddle out and surf back, Harvey recently decided it looked fun and set foot, or rather paw, on a board. Since then, there's been no stopping him, and now he even has his own board, which he grips between his teeth as he swims out to wait the next wave. Unsurprisingly, crowds now gather to watch the surfing dog ride the waves. That's water training taken to a whole new level. We're always being warned about how dangerous chocolate is for our dogs, but it proved to be a lifesaver for a dog recently. While out on a walk in Sussex, England, Dolly the terrier found the lure of a rabbit warren too much to resist. But unfortunately, she got stuck down the tiny tunnel. Firefighters used high-tech resources such as vibraphone microphones and snake-eye cameras to locate the frightened dog, but it was a low-tech chocolate muffin that finally tempted Dolly back out again. And that's all from the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Kate will be back next time, so until then, goodbye.
One reason a dog can be such a comfort when you're feeling blue is that he doesn't try to find out why. Kimberly MacDonald has been on Dogcast Radio before. She is an excellent Rottweiler breeder, and for a long time she's been a woman on a mission. I talked to her about the exciting news in the UK for a breed close to my heart, the Greater Swiss Mountain Dog.
Yes, there has. As of June this year, they looked at my application again, and it was successful this time around. So from the 1st of October this year, we now have recognition and registrations, and we go on the import register. And this means that they can have registrations with breeding restrictions, etc., and they're actually recognised. So we're going to Discover Dogs on the 8th and 9th of November, and we've been invited to go to Crufts over the 4 days at the Discover Dogs there as well.
Brilliant. So now they are sort of a pedigree breed within the UK as well as elsewhere.
That's right, yeah, they're in the working group, yeah.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So I know you've worked long and hard to get to that point. So having achieved that, what do you need to do now?
What I've done now is I've submitted the standard, which is the FCI standard, so hopefully it won't get changed or anything because that is the standard for the breed. It's with the Kennel Club and they will look at it in December. Once they approve the interim standard, because I had to put it in their format, once they've approved it, then we can show them, because at the moment, although they're on the import register, it's like a holding register, we can't show them until they've issued the standard. And once the standard is issued, then we can show them and they can go, I think, in the import register classes. Things are afoot to be changing. So we may well find that we don't stay on the import register for too long. Some breeds are on there for a long time, but they're not always on there for that long. And if we're lucky enough not to be, then hopefully we'll be out and showing in any variety not separately classified, because it will take some time to build up the quality gene pool in the UK, to build up the number of dogs that we show. So we're probably looking 8 to 10 years, maybe a bit more, before we get championship status, and then we won't get CCs at every champ show. Some of the champ shows will only be like an open show to us, because we just have to build everything over the time.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned there sort of getting more healthy dogs in. How will that happen? How do you see that happening?
Well, basically, Sue and I will be going down the same route again, we know most of the answers to the questions anyway, but we've built up the rapport over the last few years, and hopefully we will be able to bring in two more quality females and two more quality males into the UK to build the gene pool. But also we have the access now, because of Pets Passport, to take our females abroad to Europe to quality stud dogs there. We supply all the information that our bitches have had all their health screens and their character tests, etc. And we're already going on the database in the Netherlands, so they will help us, be assisting us in finding suitable stud dogs, because of epilepsy being the main disease in the breed, and there have been some dogs that have developed it in the last couple of years, so they've been retired from breeding and their parents the same. And it's not that easy to actually find a suitable stud dog. We will be looking to America also, but they are running out of bloodlines too, and hopefully we can find what we're looking for.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned health there. Obviously in the UK at the moment there's a huge move from the Kennel Club to overhaul the breed standards with the emphasis on health. You've got the chance to establish a breed right from the start here, so presumably the standard sort of values health.
Yes, You know, there's no point in starting a new breed unless you start with good building blocks. And good building blocks, as far as we're concerned, are bringing in the best that you can afford. And, you know, yes, that might mean parting with, you know, a bit more money, but it's worth it in the long run. And Sue and I have done that already with two quality females and one quality male. And the money that we paid and the relationships and friends that we've made over the years has paid off, because they're the best three in the UK currently with their health screens. Absolutely superb. And the specialist eye, the guy that's the eye specialist and the heart specialist, have absolutely adored them. And they said, what wonderful dogs. They haven't found any heart or eye problems so far. Their HD and ED and OCD results are absolutely excellent, which is what we want to, you know, again, for the building blocks. And their temperaments are lovely, you know, and that's because you do take a bit of a risk bringing in a dog at sort of 10 months, 13 months old with the breeders abroad, but you know, it's their reputation on the line as well, so they aren't liable to send you just anything. And they know how important it is for us to start with good grounding, you know, building blocks here in the UK. So we're very, very pleased with the two females and the male that we've got so far. And we hope to continue to do this in the future to bring in more and be able to go to Europe and that and widen the search a bit, like to Poland, to Czechoslovakia, because I've built up a rapport with a couple of people there that have got Swissies and helped them out. And they're looking to help us out with stud dogs and you know, more puppies and, you know, hopefully all meet up at shows and things.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I love Swissies. I mean, I've said this on the show before and I would love to have one one day. They're well worth people checking out. So where can people find out more information about them?
Well, at the moment they can find it out on my website, but there is afoot that we are setting up a website for the main breed club. And basically, that should be up and running just before Discover Dogs on the 8th and 9th of November. It might just be a front page or second page to begin with, because these things take time. But it will have the committee listed, the contact number, and, you know, we're there for help and advice, basically.
We have a link on the Dogcast Radio site to Kimberly's website, and we'll be adding the Swissie Breed Club as soon as it's set up. Kimberly is doing a brilliant job establishing the breed in exactly the right way. I look forward to adding a Swissie to our pack when the time is right. But for now, the time is right to say goodbye. So till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What does a dog become after it's 6 years old? 7 years old.